I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chalaos, Anton Bettis with you this morning. We'll be taking your calls at 801-575-8255, or you can text us at 57500. Anton, I just tested the text page, and it is working appropriately, so we are anxious to hear from all of our listeners this morning. How are you doing this morning, Tom?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing very well. I do not like this weather for gardening, but, you know, it's a little gloomy and not going to be too warm today.
No, we need the snow, but you get those 50-degree days, and then you get back to snowstorms, and it does get a little disheartening.
A little bit. My husband, though, he wasn't disheartened. He got up at 5:30 and went fishing. What?
You've got to be dedicated.
I said, it's drizzling out there. What is the deal? But yeah, he sent me pictures, and looks nice. It's strawberry, overcast, but and the ice is very thick, so they're kind of drilling their way through it, and I guess they're going to have a fun day of ice fishing.
I hope so.
Yeah. So this morning we wanted to talk about the Carol Mackey Daphne, which is a beautiful bush, and it smells even more incredible than it looks.
It is beautiful. There's actually three or four different Daphnes that are common at local garden centers, depending, but Carol Mackey seems to be the most popular. It has variegated leaves on it, and so when it's not in bloom in the spring, which is its main attraction, it does have decorative foliage that looks nice through the season.
Mm-hmm. The only problem I have found with mine is that I don't know how to prune them, and I just learned how to prune this week with the USU Extension. And I don't know how I'm going to get this bush looking the way it should. It's really overgrown and huge. Huge. When I say huge, it's like taking over the front yard.
Wow. It sounds like it's in a happy spot.
It's very happy. Right up against the courtyard facing west, which apparently isn't supposed to be the best spot for it. But I have two on either side of the sidewalk going leading up to my house, and they're both pretty big.
You know, that's excellent. And I think the renewal pruning would be what to do. The problem with the Daphnes is they're sensitive. You know, they're the ones that once you plant them, you don't move them. You try not to over prune them because they're so finicky that sometimes they can just up and die. You know, they're not super long lived. Sometimes you can get 10 or 15 years and then all of a sudden you come out and they're declining. Mm-hmm. And so they're just super finicky shrubs, but I think that they're oftentimes well worth it because of those flowers and the fragrance that they have in late winter and early spring.
Yeah, there's nothing more welcoming than that beautiful fragrance from a Daphne bush.
Yes, and it's not one of these not off-putting at all. It's just a nicely scented fragrance that is really enjoyed. I've read in a few places that if you're doing like sensory gardens for those that may not be able to see, this is one that you can put in so that it can be enjoyed by all, you know.
Right.
So there's that one, that aspect
to it. Hadn't even thought of that.
Yeah. And so as far as them getting too big, this landscape plants have a tendency to do that. And
people who are too busy have a tendency to let them get out of control. Let's just say that.
Yeah, you could try giving them a haircut after they bloom, but with the goal of bringing them back to a more usable size, I would recommend doing as little as possible just so that they stay happy.
All right. For those people who have not planted one of these before, what is their best chance of success? Where should they plant it in their yard?
There's an east exposure or even a north exposure to where they're getting a little bit more bright filtered light seems to work. They don't like strong winds, especially in the winter, and they don't like a lot of afternoon bright sun. And so there are situations like yours that they do just fine and, you know, they've been happy and that's great. You know, but the general rule is that you put them someplace where they're out, they're protected from wind and afternoon sun.
Yeah, they don't do very well on the north side, I've noticed.
Yeah, and it could be too shaded. So maybe like the northwest exposure or not, you know, you don't want a ton of afternoon sun on them. But if it is on a north side, it does need to be bright enough for them to get the light they need.
Yeah, the only thing I can think about mine is maybe they're getting a little bit of shade from the courtyard and the house.
But they could be.
Yeah, but other than that, I don't understand. And how about as far as water? What kind of water?
Average amounts of water. They don't like to be dried out. So they're not really super drought hardy, but they also don't tolerate a swamp. And so oftentimes our lawn sprinklers are fine if that's what we have. But if you have them on their own irrigation, they need to have their root zone wet about a foot deep about at least once a week after they're established.
Right. Do you recommend any special soil or fertilizer for the Carol Mackie?
The soil needs to be well drained. And so a loamy or a sandy soil works best. These will not establish if the soil has too much clay in it. Mm-hmm. So any place in the bench areas, they do well. The more clay that you do have as you go toward the lakes, whether it's the Great Salt Lake or Utah Lake, you have a better chance of them not really thriving.
Right. Anything else special we need to know? They usually bloom like, what, twice a season?
Usually it's through the late winter into early spring.
Okay. But do they bloom a second time?
They can. If they get a little bit of shearing or something, they may bloom a second time, but it's usually the main bloom time is more spring.
Okay, they're one of the earlier bloomers.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, I did see yesterday, Maria, I was over at Thanksgiving Point helping teach Master Gardener stuff, and they have their hellebores are in full bloom. And they've got we talked about Scylla a few weeks earlier, the squill. Mm-hmm. And then they also had some crazy tulips here and there that were only an inch or two out of the ground and already had flowers.
Wow.
That were a little confused. But there's more and more things starting to bloom.
Right. After reading all of the handouts that Michael Caron sent out on my way to work this morning, I was noticing all the trees that have been pruned properly and improperly.
Yeah.
Once you learn where those cuts are supposed to be made, you start to see how things people have done things maybe not in the best way.
Yeah.
Or you notice the ones that are perfect and you go, oh, okay, that's had the proper
I've been
pruning.
Intending on finding, you know, a lot of times people, because it is expensive to remove a tree, will just have that tree taken down to the main scaffold branches and everything else is cut off. And then I've wanted to take progressive pictures annually of what grows back. And once you know what to look for, you see them all over the place. And, you know, when you do stuff like that, it just increases your danger. I won't say exponentially, but it would, you know, you get a globe willow, especially, or some of the maples that do this, cottonwoods, and those branches are so much more likely to break on your fences and cars and house. And so that kind of pruning, those pruning cuts are so important.
Yeah, not just for safety, but to make sure that you are, you know, building that tree up the best way, the foundation the best way that you can, and that you're not scarring it in a way that it's going to start getting diseases, like injuring it.
Correct.
Things I hadn't even thought of before.
And so there's that, the collar around the base of the branch, if you're cutting back to another branch or to the trunk, that you don't want to cut through so that it heals over better, but you also don't want to leave it too long because that creates opportunity for diseases to get into the tree.
Yeah, it was kind of eye-opening this week.
Yes.
So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Thank you to USU Extension for putting out such great information.
Mike spent a lot of time over the last 2 weeks. He just put up, and unfortunately this is just Master Gardener, but he put up a new plant propagation video for next week. Terrific. That should be on the YouTube too. So.
Right. I'm going to look forward to that. The way he did the handouts or whoever put them together, it was really well done, so you could actually see where those cuts should make. It was very clear.
Good.
So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And if you would like to know more about the Carol Mackey Daphne, oh, I did want to ask you one more question about that. Why did you choose Carol Mackey over some of the others?
It's just a little more common. It is one that you can go to most major garden centers and find. You will find the other ones. The flower colors will vary a little bit. Most of them are not variegated. And any of them will be fine. It's just that this one's a little more popular in commerce.
And do they all smell as wonderful?
Yes, they do.
Okay, good to know. And I'm taking a look at the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page, and already Caitlin has put up a fact sheet on the Daphne if you'd like to learn more about that. We are taking your calls. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Anton with you this morning, taking your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. We're going to go right to the phone lines where Kathy in Holiday is waiting. And good morning, Kathy. What is your question?
Well, I need to, I think, overseed my lawn this spring. It was looking kind of bad, and I wondered what the best way to do it was, whether to aerate or mow closely, what kind of seeds are the best, and when to do it.
Well, the best time to do that are my levels. Oh, sorry, I wasn't coming through on my microphone quite like I wanted. But the best time to aerate your lawn is, to reseed your lawn is any time. The advantage to waiting just a couple of weeks would be that you could aerate, and pulling those plugs up will open up some slots where those seeds can fall in. And then as those plugs break down a little bit, they will add some microorganisms into the upper levels of the soil and help improve it that way. So if you wanted to, you could put seed down now, but it's snowing right now, so maybe when it's not snowing, but there's no problem with waiting for a slightly warmer day also.
Okay. But aerate first, and then should I cover it with any mulch or replenish?
No. Those seeds will work their way into the grass and get enough protection while it's cool. Your germination rates won't be as high, but enough of it should germinate to help thicken it up.
And then keep it watered so that the seeds can sprout, or is enough moisture usually down in the earth?
You're going to have to keep an eye on it. If the soil's moist, you don't need to water, but if we don't get rain and snow for several days, then you may need to go ahead and supplement. You won't need to use a lot of water, but you may need to. Most municipalities on the Wasatch Front have their irrigation going by the first week of April, so you could supplement water if you needed to, but you oftentimes don't.
Yeah. Is there any particular kind of seed that is better for overseeding, or just all-purpose seed that I can get at the garden store?
I would recommend just using what you can find. You probably have Kentucky bluegrass, so I'd go back in with that same kind of grass. But if you wanted to go to a local box store, or local farm store, they will have either bags of it or they will have loose seed that you can purchase by the pound.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for taking my call, and we'll start on that in a few weeks.
You're
all
welcome.
Right. Thank you for your call this morning. Ton, our next listener, has a Persian carrot tree by their front door. They say it's been doing very well for about 20 years, but every year it forms kind of a white powder-looking stuff underneath the leaves. And they say they're wondering if that's powdery mildew or a bug, and what should they do to get rid of it?
Well, what I would recommend with it is it could just be producing something that's inherent to the tree. And did they say if it was summer or fall that this powder shows up?
They just said that it happens every year. But it could underneath the leaves is the part that caught my attention.
It could be pollen that it's dropping, and it could just be something that the tree produces. If the tree is healthy and looks good, I wouldn't do anything. It just could be, if it's happening every year and the tree's healthy, then it's natural to the tree's life cycle. And it's, although a little annoying, I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah, I've never heard of a Persian carrot tree.
Well, it's probably Persian parrot, P-A-R-R-O-T.
Okay.
We normally would call it Persian ironwood or Protea persica. And it's a rare tree. It's one that's a little hard to find. It is pretty. But I'm doing my best guess here on that they have actually this Persian ironwood, Protea persica, out their front door, which I compliment them on having such a rare tree. But I don't think that it, as long as the tree looks healthy, that it is a problem.
Okay, let's go to Linda in Pleasant Grove. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning. I had a question about night crawlers. Now, I have a lot of lumps in my yard. It's hard to walk on. And I know it's night crawlers because I went out one night last summer and caught about 100 of them. So how can I get rid of them?
Well, it's more, why are they surfacing in your lawn? And you're not going to get rid of them, because even if you did kill them all off, they leave spores behind, and any place that there's opportunity for them to hatch, they're going to come back within a few months. So on your lawn, how often are you watering during the summer?
It's 3 times a week.
3 times a week. And then how long are you running your irrigation?
It's about 30 minutes.
Okay. So in normal circumstances, that's not too excessive. Have you dug in your lawn to see if you have a lot of clay soil in there, or for some reason that it's not too well drained?
Well, it does. The water doesn't collect.
Okay.
And over the 12 years we've lived here, they seem to have spread, over these 10 years, and they seem to start out in one place, but now they've moved to our front yard.
Well, it's because you have a situation where they can live, and in normal circumstances, earthworms and night crawlers are not a plague. If they're causing bumps and things, it's usually because they can't go deeply enough into the soil where they would have sufficient oxygen, and so they surface. And so the most common times that they do this is when they are in a very clay soil, or if the soil is wet or compacted, or a combination of some of those. And so that's why I'm asking more about your soil, the amount of thatch, the watering patterns, because in an average soil, under good conditions, they don't do this unless there's been lots of rainstorms or the lawn is overwatered or compacted.
Okay. It is clay here. When we put the lawn in before that, we put a lot of mulch in.
You do have earthworms and night crawlers, it generally says you have a healthy situation unless they're surfacing. So what I would recommend doing is increase the amount of aeration you're doing in your lawn, and probably to a spring and fall schedule. then temporarily there are a number of fungicides and grub preventers that you can put on your lawn for grub control or fungal control that temporarily reduce the worm population. I can't recommend them for that because it's completely off label, but if you're treating your lawn for lawn grubs, a side effect of that is that the earthworm population will diminish. So, but it is a temporary thing. So you could try that for the grubs, but I'm forming my words very carefully there. But I think the longer term solution is to find out why they're surfacing and try to remedy that. And that I might maybe back off to watering twice a week. And you know, you were doing a total of 90 minutes. And so maybe water twice a week for 40 minutes at a shot so that the lawn dries out a little further. And then I would start aerating in the spring and fall.
All right, Linda, thank you for your call. We need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.